You're listening to the Best of the Morning Show podcast. Today's best segments from all 3 hours rolled into one.
All right, Bob, what is the story, the biggest story in sports here in Knoxville on this Monday morning?
I think it has to be that baseball series with the Vols. If you think about, we talked about it on Friday, they had the doubleheader, he had to go in, and at a minimum, we felt it was important they win that series. Sweeping would be great, of course, but we're realistic. Could not go 1-2. Really felt that was critical, and they didn't. And it was kind of ran the gamut in terms of what kind of games they were. If you think about the games on Friday, and then what the game on Saturday became. So yeah, I think to me that was super important. If you also factor in what happened around the conference with some of the other teams on top, with Texas A&M and Arkansas.
Yeah, it's funny you say that it was kind of running the gambit of emotions and types of games, because, you know, on game one on Friday, you had just A.J. Causey kind of putting the team on his back, it felt like. Just having a dominant pitching performance, really getting in a groove. And Tennessee's offense wasn't great in that game one, but it did enough, you know, as he held them down. Game two was frustrating. You had a couple of defensive lapses. You couldn't quite come through in the ninth inning. You gave it a run. You made them sweat, but you didn't come through in the clutch. And then game three, you fell behind, much like you did in game two. But then the offense woke up, started grinding, and then, yeah, just absolutely exploded in the sixth inning. 11 runs. I believe it was, what, 5 straight hits to start the inning before giving up an out? And then, yeah, then you had some two-out magic where you just kept going. You even had a 2-RBI strikeout for Kaveris Tierz as he strikes out. And then the Florida catcher with one of the worst throws you'll ever see. I still don't know what the hell happened there. As he threw the ball between the second baseman and first baseman. I don't think I've ever seen that on one of those throws. And, yeah, that allowed Tennessee to just keep it going. And then in the seventh inning, you had your two big boppers start big bopping again with both Christian Moore and Blake Burke going back-to-back. So you come out of the weekend feeling really, really good about your offense. You come out feeling really good about your pitching, too. Like, that is the best 2-1 that maybe you could have when you look at the performance from Causey in game one and then the offensive explosion in game three. And Drew Beam was the solid Drew Beam that he always is. Didn't get the win, but just eats up innings, allows you to have your full bullpen basically for game three. And then your bullpen did enough in game three to hold them down and keep you within distance until the offense woke up.
Nah, I was thinking about Blake Burke on his home run. How about his bat toss? I loved it. Yeah. It was just so, like, businesslike, man.
I prefer the Ken Griffey Jr. approach that he has on those home runs, where Griffey kind of had that same swing where he just connected and then the bat just immediately goes down.
Yeah.
And you're just like, that's even better than the cool bat flip. It's like, yeah, I don't need this anymore. I'm done with you. Ball is going far. Bat going to the ground.
Now, I thought I agree with the pitching. Causey in game one on Friday looked great. Our guy Kirby pitched in both games on Friday. He's going to be joining us tomorrow, by the way.
Okay.
To preview the upcoming week. But, yeah, he, you know, he looked good. And then, like you said, with Beam, nothing spectacular. I wish we could have gotten that Amick throwing error back. That one felt like it hurt a little bit. But still, all in all, the weekend was good. Nate Snead on Saturday, my gosh, looked solid. And like you were saying, John, really didn't have to go deep into the bullpen at all. So as far as various arms versus just sticking with one guy. So I felt it was a great weekend. God, I was trying to think, if you're a Florida fan, that had to be just incredibly painful to watch. I, You don't see many, every once in a while you do, but these double-digit innings, if you're on the other end of that, that's just got to be horrible.
I was watching that with some buddies, and one of my friends just, like, fell asleep at the start of the sixth inning and woke up still in the sixth inning. Yeah. Like, and he took, like, an hour-long nap.
I think 37 minutes was the official runtime of that inning, I think I saw, or the half inning.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
How many? There was some incredible, I forget the number now, how many pitches were thrown in that inning. It was like 70 or 80 pitches or something crazy. God, yeah, it's stating the obvious, but Tennessee offensively needed something like that too. They'd been kind of dry for a little bit by their standards, but it just reminded me, should remind all the fans of what can really happen with this team if they can just keep it dialed in with the bats.
I thought it was very important for Hunter Ensley too.
Oh,
just 5 RBI. In the one half of the inning, 7 RBI in the entire game. I think I'm going to try to make that a thing. Instead of getting RBIs, I think I'm going RBI.
I was just about to ask why you
were saying that. Yeah, I think I'm going with RBI. I wanted to try it out. It feels good. I'm going with RBI.
You're an innovator, man.
Because it's not run batted ins. It's runs batted in. So RBI. That's what I'm going with.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he exploded. It was nice to see him kind of break out of his little bit of his slump and actually, you know, get some big time, just some power hits too. I mean, just crushing the ball. That felt good. The back half of the lineup.
I was really just about to say that. That whole back half got a better little bit of a confidence boost there. At the
back half of the lineup was awesome in game 3, and you needed it because the top half of the lineup was not very good for most of that weekend. You had Christian Moore just roping singles. And really from game 2 and on, I should say, because Amick, I thought, had some good moments in game 1. And I guess in game 2, he hit the bomb too. So that was his only hit of the day, or hit of that game. But then I thought they kind of broke out of it late in the game, like I said, with Burke finally hitting a home run.
Curley had some timely hits too, I thought. I mean, they just all did. It was like you said, the back of the order, save Robin Villeneuve. He did not. We're just asking about him on Thursday, and it was like, man.
If you are looking for an area of concern, is it just like the DH spot right now? Because I know Tears DH'd in game 3 as he came back from his issue.
Yeah.
You had Backus come in, get one at bat, then get benched. I thought he got benched from his play in right field. He only got one at bat and then, you know, got sent to the bench, and some people were upset that he only got one at bat. But I had no problem with him getting benched because I thought that Tony held him responsible for that third run on the Amick throwing error. If you let a guy score from first base on a throwing error, like, that means something's gone wrong. And I didn't think the right fielder where he was playing got over there to back up the throw enough. I don't think he was hustling. Then he kind of fumbled the ball in the corner and let that run score. And I think Vitello kind of held him responsible for it, which I'm okay with. They made a big deal about that being his first SEC start. And I just feel like if you're Vitello, you got to send the message like, hey, if you're getting your first start, you should be busting your ass more than anybody on the field. You should be overeager, not late to doing little league things. Like, that was kind of unacceptable. And at the time, it made it 3-0, and you're worried about, you know, losing that series and losing that game.
Yeah, it still seems like they're rotating guys at that DH spot. They haven't really found anyone that's taken a hold of it as far as, like, the whole season. I thought at the start of the season it really felt like Dalton Bargo was just going to take that over. But then, you know, we've talked about that a little bit with, you know, at the end of last week there. But with Bargo just kind of slumping recently.
At the beginning of the season, I felt like Bargo was going to bat 450 or so. Like, I felt like they couldn't get him out.
Exactly. He felt great. Felt like an amazing, amazing option at that DH spot. But now he's a little bit shaky. Reese Chapman is still kind of getting settled into. So, yeah, I mean, I still feel like you're kind of going through some guys that have some strikeout issues kind of at that DH spot, honestly.
That is that the biggest area of concern? Because for me it is. Just, like, it doesn't seem like anybody is playing well right now at that position. And maybe, you know, you give Backus another shot at it, and, you know, maybe he – makes up for it because he'd been hitting well coming into it, and that's why he got the start. But it's just, I thought his at bat was fine. He struck out, but then the play in right field, because he had to be in there for Tears, I thought that was left something to be desired.
Yeah.
Tennessee falls down to eighth in RPI even after the series win against Florida, which is kind of funny just because you might come out of the week number one in the country. Maybe. Maybe. I think Arkansas will keep it. Or not Arkansas. I think they lost. They got killed by Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. They lost that series.
Yeah, and they got killed in game three. But I still think maybe them or A&M stays ahead of you, but they both lost their weekend series. And A&M looked pretty shaky against LSU for most of that weekend.
I didn't see what Clemson did this weekend, but they might jump up too.
Sure. They were behind Tennessee coming into the week. Tennessee won their series but did lose to Lipscomb. But, yeah, maybe number one, maybe number two in the country, but still maybe kind of on that cutoff in terms of hosting a super regional or having that locked in. Mm-hmm. The good news is Tennessee wins the weekend series, and if you're looking at chasing an SEC championship, you're still within striking distance. You're still right there. Kentucky with an impressive weekend. I don't think I thought Kentucky was going to win that series against Arkansas, but they did. So now you are tied with Arkansas. You're a game ahead of A&M and a game behind Kentucky. You're right there. Sweep, you'd have been tied. I feel like you should have had the sweep, maybe. I don't think that Florida team is very good. I think they're very talented, but I don't think they're very good. But you can't be too mad about a series win on the road.
Feeling good about going into this week against Vandy. Vandy got swept by Georgia.
They seem dead. There's rumors coming out of Nashville that Corbin set for retirement at the end of the year.
Really?
That's what people are saying. I don't know if that's why the team feels like they've let go of the rope. I don't know if they're very good. I don't know if they've got caught cheating. You know, you had a coach in the SEC come out and say, hey, there's a team cheating right now. Just look at their home splits versus their road splits. They suck on the road, but all of a sudden they're pretty good at home. Something's going on there. And then from that moment too, Vandy's kind of struggled from there as well. So Tennessee's won what, 7 in a row against Vandy, I believe is the number.
I think that's right.
You're headed to Nashville this weekend. It does definitely feel like two teams and two programs continuing to head in opposite directions. It's weird because the teams you just played and the team you're in line to play, Florida and Vandy, you kind of need them to suck against you, but then get off the mat because they are the two teams that Kentucky plays. Kentucky, who you're chasing for the SEC championship, you're a game behind. They go to Gainesville this weekend and then finish the season against Vanderbilt. So you need Vanderbilt to suck against Tennessee, but then be good against Kentucky, or you need Florida to go from getting embarrassed in game three against Tennessee to maybe at least taking one, if not two, at home against Kentucky. I thought that was an interesting wrinkle in your SEC championship chase.
Hey, we got to pay attention to Queens tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Got to win that one.
Yeah, honestly.
Yeah, got to win that one. That one's a big game now after the way that you played against Lipscomb last week. That's, going to cost you. If you don't start this week ranked number one, it's because you lost to Lipscomb.
Yeah.
So they maybe cost the number one ranking, which maybe you're okay with. You don't want to be the number one team, the number one curse, all those things. But, yeah, you got to take care of business against Queens.
Where is Queens? North Carolina?
I think that is the school in Charlotte.
That's what I thought, but I just don't know much about them.
But I'm not exactly sure.
Trying to look them up, but their page just keeps buffering. Low-budget school.
Yeah, I can't imagine they're coming down from New York. I do believe it's North Carolina. I think we had this discussion. I think we talked about this before. Next six SEC games, you're on the road against Vanderbilt. You end the season at South Carolina. I'll set the over-under at 4.5. 4.5, Sam, you going over or under?
I'll take the over.
Jace, 4.5. You going over or under?
I'll take the over. I think that they get 2 against Vanderbilt, and I wouldn't be surprised if they were to sweep South Carolina.
Okay. Bob, over, under, 4.5?
Yeah, I'd go over. I'd go over. They understand the gravity of it all. I'd like to see them sweep Vanderbilt more than anything, but I don't know. Vandy might be a little desperate. It's a rival, and they just came off a sweep, so maybe 2 out of 3 might be what we have to settle for there.
Seems like Vandy fans a little fed up with the team too. So, like, I'll be interested to see how much orange is in Nashville this weekend. Makes the trip over there, or is already over there, and just, you know, pays the money to go on the road.
See how loud the Whistler is.
See how loud the Whistler is. I doubt he's giving up on the boys. I doubt he's giving up on the boys. But it's kind of crazy. I mean, it's just a testament to Vitello. Just that South Carolina, you know, had their 2 championships. Vandy's been the standard in the SEC for so long that you're ending the season against them, and we're looking at, yeah, 5 wins minimum. That's kind of where we're all at. Hey, maybe sweep both of them, but 5 wins minimum. You've passed it both as programs. And really, it's not even close at this point. Tony Vitello is the man. We all know that. But just, it still feels like we take him for granted at times. Boys are playing good ball, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Third best odds to win the national championship right now. Still behind Arkansas and A&M. Last I checked, Tennessee 9-1. A&M's 5-1. Arkansas 6-1. Which I think is a good number.
Mm-hmm. No problem with that.
I think you got better pitching than A&M, and you got better hitting than Arkansas. So I do think of those 3 teams, you maybe are the most well-rounded. And you're getting A.J. Russell back, maybe as soon as this weekend. That'll be another arm you could throw out of the bullpen.
Yeah.
If he can give you what we think he can, then that's obviously a huge deal.
If he can go give you that performance that Nate Snead gave you on Saturday, that's the type of role I think you're hoping for with him coming back from that injury.
Do you know what Snead's numbers were off the top of your head?
I want to say he went like 6 maybe.
Because I was going to say, my expectations for Russell are even lower than that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would say that would be like best case scenario.
He went 5.
I want to see Russell just give me 3 innings maybe. Like, just be a starter. Be a guy that get the ball rolling in like a tournament game. And like, you know, because I think Tennessee is going to just, you know, match arms out of the bullpen. You know, ideally, you have your game 1 set up. That's been working for you. Game 3, Snead's kind of been that guy for you. But I do think you're going to need like a 4th option. And maybe Russell's that guy that can get you started and get you to the bullpen. He could also be a guy, you know, down the stretch that could maybe give you a couple innings, you know, in these games against South Carolina and Vandy out of the bullpen too. The pitching staff, I feel pretty good about them. You know, considering especially where we felt, you know, coming out of the Alabama series. I mean, where you're freaking out that you didn't have enough arms in the bullpen. Turns out Frank Anderson is going to maximize his pitchers by the end of the year. He's really, really good. Any other baseball thoughts for now?
No, I don't think so.
Sam? Jace?
Think we're good.
Think we're good? All right. Game back. Hopefully we can track down Kentucky. Stick with us. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. Coming out of the weekend, the other sports we were paying attention to the most, the NBA playoffs has a 2nd round now officially here. Got started on Saturday night with an absolute banger of a game as the Timberwolves beat the Nuggets. To me, that was the biggest takeaway from the basketball weekend.
Yeah, I would say that was a statement game from Minnesota. I mean, they're clearly showing that they belong. What a game, man. I'm now of the mind that those might be the 2 best teams in the league at this point. I really feel that way with all due respect to Boston and the Knicks. I just think the winner of that series could end up, I could see them winning it all, really.
I think both of those teams are really, really good. I'm not going to say that they're both better than Boston. They might be, but I think Boston's on that level. And I thought that going into the series that Minnesota was a bad matchup for Denver. Denver, I think, was like minus 200, where Minnesota was like plus 170. I liked Minnesota's number there. They just had to win three games to cover the series spread, too. Like, to me, at least it's a seven-game series if Minnesota loses. But after watching game one, I feel like Minnesota just is the perfectly wrong matchup for Denver. I don't think that Jamal Murray is going to do what he did against the Lakers. The Lakers didn't have anybody that could stop Murray. I think Minnesota's got two really good defenders they could throw at him. You saw Murray struggle in the first half. He was scoreless. Jaden McDaniels, Anthony Edwards could just take turns making his life hell. Then in the post, you have 3 7-footers, basically, that can rotate in just to have size on Jokic, especially if Towns can stay out of foul trouble. You put Towns on Jokic, then kind of have Rudy Gobert just has that free safety making life, you know, hell, yeah, for everything else. And Denver doesn't have really anything they can do chess-wise because Aaron Gordon just kind of hangs out at the three-point line, so Gobert doesn't really have to guard him. Like, hey, good luck, Aaron Gordon. Just shoot a bunch of open threes, and maybe you can win that way. But he's not a good shooter, and that doesn't seem to be a good way for them to run offense. So I do think Denver just kind of up against the wall here matchup-wise, especially if Anthony Edwards is going to play like young Kobe, young Michael Jordan, and just be out there and be the best player on the court, even with a team that has Nikola Jokic on the other side. Anthony Edwards is still the best player on the court, and that was crazy seeing.
Yeah, you bring up the whole situation for Jokic having to deal with all those bigs. I mean, his line was a typical Jokic, 32, 8, and 9, but what I saw was he had to work his ass off to get all of that, and I just don't know if that's sustainable for a whole series. Minnesota's going to just keep throwing that at him, I think, or they should. And, so I agree. I think the matchups are just not favorable at all for Denver. Doesn't mean Denver can't win some games in this, but, boy, I feel very different about Minnesota at the moment, and it's largely in part to Anthony Edwards. I mean, my gosh, what else can you say about him? I mean, dude is just absolutely elite. You could argue he is fast emerging as kind of the face of the game. I really believe that at this point. It's moving that quickly.
We've been waiting for the next great American basketball star to kind of transition to as Curry and LeBron fade out. I've been saying for years it's going to be Anthony Edwards. I feel vindicated. As he has, yeah, kind of just taken that throne. Did you see the list? Did you see the list of players that have scored 35 straight in three straight playoff games at age 22 or younger?
I did not see that.
Have you seen it, Sam?
Yeah.
There have been four players that have scored 35 points or more in three straight playoff games at age 22 or younger, which is crazy. He's only 22.
I know.
Absolutely crazy. Anthony Edwards became the fourth person. The three other people, LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, back when he was Lou Alcindor. So, like, basically four of the top 10 players of all time. And you could put Kobe in the top six and make it four top six players if you really want to. Jordan, of course, is in college for 3 years, so he couldn't do that at that age. But that's what air we're in with Anthony Edwards right now.
You had the announcers even being like, man, that looks like somebody I know. Like,
yeah, Reggie was like, saying that.
Like, man, it looks like Michael.
Well, I mean, like, he has that same mid-range game.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, not too many people at that size have had the just, hey, I'm going to just kind of have that mid-post fadeaway game or just kind of hit these pull-up mid-range jumpers just over and over and over. And he was nails in those in game one and, you know, was in the entire Phoenix series too. So, yeah, no, he is wired like Kobe and Jordan from that perspective. And he has that same defensive tenacity too. No, he's a top player in the league and is ascending right before our eyes. How far can he go? How far can he carry them? Can he have a 2007 LeBron James finals breakthrough? Can he have, you know, the Bulls when they slayed the Pistons in 91, I believe, when they swept them and kind of ended their reign? Can he have that type of series right now? Dwayne Wade carrying the Heat to the finals? Maybe. Maybe. They've yet to lose. They're 5-0. To me, they've been the story of the playoffs.
Yeah, and you just touched on something that I think is what separates him as, again, that elite level is what Heat can do. He can affect the game defensively, too. We've seen it. Some of the biggest highlight plays of the entire season defensively have come from him. There's no real gaps in his game at the moment, Moon. I mean, there's nothing he needs to work on. He's just, it's like, let that guy ride. It's incredible. And Minnesota just seem aligned too. This whole situation that's going on with Chris Finch, he's there, but he's sitting in the second row. This guy, they even asked Edwards that about, is it Micah Norry, I think is the name of the assistant who's kind of running point as the head coach on the floor at the moment. He was like, man, that's our guy. You know, he was like, there's nothing different. Finch is right there, you know, yelling. So, I mean, they just, nothing seems to have them set back right now.
I think Anthony Edwards, the thing that has not been talked about enough is probably the playmaking that he's taken under two. Like, he's handling the ball a lot. And the double team's coming. He's making the right passes. He's not being too aggressive because, like, scoring 35 straight is impressive, but, like, sometimes guys can score against what's best for the team. They can force the issue. It hasn't felt like he's forced the issue. It feels like everything has been natural and free-flowing. And what you talked about with his defense, I do think we will head into next year talking about him as the best two-way player in the league. You know, outside of Jokic, especially if you're looking at just at wings, you'll be looking at him as the best two-way player in the league because he brings it on defense, and the offense, of course, is already there.
Yeah, he's just a joy to watch, too, man. That was just such a great playoff game, and for anybody who we know, there's some people who aren't NBA fans. It's like, if you watch NBA playoff ball in a game like that, that's about as good as it gets.
Well, if you need storylines to get involved, to get interested, like, to me, Minnesota has the best storyline. They're a franchise that's never really won. But also, like, as a fan base that's as petty as Tennessee is, like, I feel like Minnesota, man, they have to have a lot of receipts and a lot of bullets in the chamber because they were made fun of so much last year when they traded so many picks and so many players for Rudy Gobert. They got made fun of, worst trade ever. Last year they were a failure. Gobert wasn't very good. He was hurt, is what they're claiming. And this year they've come back and shown, like, yeah, this trade, this is why we made it. Carl Anthony Towns at the four, we made fun of him for a long time. He, you know, has called himself the best shooting big man ever. We made fun of him for that. We make fun of his sassiness. We make fun of Minnesota in general. Gobert, I thought, was awesome in game one. I thought he made two really big offensive plays and then had maybe one of the most impressive plays as he stopped Jokic and then broke up a pass as Jokic tried to throw his little alley-oop to Gordon. Gobert's been really, really good, and Gobert's been made fun of a lot. Minnesota's been made fun of for trading him. And if they get through Denver, it's already a success, but then, like, they'll look and they'll be favored probably over anybody they play in the Western Conference Finals, whether it be Dallas or Oklahoma City. And then you'll take your chance in the finals. But, yeah, Minnesota fans have to be loading up the petty chamber ready to go because they were made fun of so much last year.
Yeah. We haven't even talked about Naz Reid. I mean, my God, what a game for him, too. And then I was texting you guys because – I think it was last week I was saying I thought Malik Monk should have been sixth man of the year. I retract that. I mean, he made some grown man plays at the most clutch times in that game. Very impressed with him.
Yeah, he stunk in the first half, and he stunk for half of the third quarter. But then, yeah, when he got in the third quarter and you know, kind of took over the game for stretches. Yeah. And he was kind of the one that made you realize, okay, like Minnesota's going to win this game, or at least is not going to get blown out. They're going to be right there because Naz Reid just took off and banked in a three and then followed up with a nice putback jam and then a nice baseline and one. Like, he kind of took over the beginning of that fourth quarter and I think had 14 second half points, I believe. And, yeah, looked like a matchup problem for them, especially when you compare it to who Denver's bringing off the bench. Jokic is the only guy that has any size out there. They don't bring anybody with size off the bench. Their guys off the bench are all guards, basically.
I want to say Reed scored like 10 in a row at a really critical point of that game. I mean, that was impressive. But you're right about Denver. I think what we're seeing with Denver is there's just no depth, really. They've got some guard depth, but that's it.
They're going to have to dust off the carcass of DeAndre Jordan, yes. I think. And that's not a good place to be in the playoffs in 2024. Wrapping up hour one here in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Boy, did I drink me some White Claw Hard Seltzer this weekend. Responsibly, of course. Appreciate them for their support. You can drink some White Claw Hard Seltzer, too. All you got to do is go to your local package store, your gas stations, go to bars, and order some White Claw Hard Seltzer. Support the people who support us. Black cherry, still the goated flavor. Hour two coming at you. We'll kick it off with about last night. We'll catch up on some other stories from the weekend. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. Do I deduct points from you, Sam, or is that Fox National that messed that up?
That's Fox National.
Okay.
Sure.
Can we get them on the line and tell them to tighten it up a little bit? The fuck that happens way too often.
It's been happening for a long time, honestly.
This RTI Read and React brought to you by Knoxville Smiles. Don't put off your dental visits any longer. Dr. Stephen Malone and his staff, they want to help give you the best dental care that you can possibly get in Knoxville. That's because they take pride in listening to and communicating with their patients. From routine dental cleanings to teeth removal, restorative procedures, Invisalign veneers, they can do it all at Knoxville Smiles. Contact them today at 865-539-1776 to set up an appointment. You can take a virtual tour of their state-of-the-art West Knoxville facility at KnoxvilleSmiles.com. KnoxvilleSmiles.com. I smile when I talk to my friend Ryan Schumpert, Rocket Top Insider. Ryan, top of the morning to you.
Good morning. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Tennessee, the number one team in the country in the polls releasing this morning. Do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd say I definitely agree that they should be the number one team in the country. To me, it feels like Tennessee, Texas A&M, and Arkansas are all really, really similar, are really, really close to each other. But I definitely think when you look at how Tennessee's playing right now, and obviously Texas A&M gets swept at LSU, Arkansas drops a series to Kentucky, I definitely feel like Tennessee is deserving and should be the top team in the country in all the rankings and polls this morning.
Now, do you actually think Tennessee is the best team in the country?
To me, that's where it becomes harder. I feel like I trust Arkansas's pitching maybe a little bit more. That's also the difference between, you know, college baseball and college football or college basketball, where I watch a lot of these games, especially college basketball, because Tennessee, you know, a basketball game doesn't take all day, and there's other games being played on nights where Tennessee doesn't. College baseball, I've probably watched Arkansas play a small handful of times this season and then A&M play, I think, maybe twice. I watched the final five innings of their game against LSU on Saturday night after the Tennessee game, and that was one of the only times I've watched them this season. So it's a little bit harder to say. I think Tennessee does still have some questions, but again, I think that it's very, very close, very, very tight between Tennessee and the Aggies and Razorbacks.
Hey, Ryan, good morning. You know, we were talking a little bit earlier about the games this weekend against Florida. I'd be interested in your take on your biggest takeaway from this series. I mean, it felt like the bats, it's understating it, the bats got healthy in that last game, but we also felt there was some real pitching strength that we saw there as well. But what was your biggest takeaway from the series?
I think my biggest takeaway for the series is it felt like Tennessee didn't play very well for 2.5 games and hand up run rolling game three, winning the series. And I know it's against the Florida team, it's underachieved a bit this year, but a really talented Florida team. on the road, and I think that continues to just show how good this team can be and how high their ceiling is, because like you said, the pitching, it's just been exceptional really for now what's been half of conference play. I mean, the last 14 conference games, which goes back to that series opener at Auburn that they lost, they're averaging 3.5 runs per game. They've got it figured out. They've got it rolling. AJ Causey's been great. Aaron Combs has been great. Nate Snead, after what I wouldn't have called a bad 2 weeks, but maybe a little bit more shaky 2 weeks compared to how good he was early in the season, was fantastic on Saturday night in the series finale. And then it just showed that the bats, even when they're not in a great weekend and they're a little bit cool, boom, you snap your fingers just like that. They can explode, score 11 runs in one inning, 14 over two innings, and turn a deficit into a run rule victory just like that. So you continue to see how high the ceiling is. And, you know, I'd say even, you know, I talked about them maybe not playing great this weekend. It wasn't even just the offense in those first, you know, couple games. They made a handful of defensive miscues that were uncharacteristic and maybe cost them the game. Game two at a doubleheader on Friday and cost them another run in the game on Saturday. So you're seeing Tennessee not play their best and still go on the road and win a series against a good team. I think it says a lot about just how talented this team is. And when you combine the talent of that lineup, which is as good as about any in the country, and you pair it with a pitching staff that just continues to get better and better as they go through the season, I think there's a lot to be excited about with this team.
Tennessee, number 8 right now in ERA. You talked about their pitchers. You did not mention A.J. Russell. Do we have any updates on him and when we can expect him to return to game action?
Well, we don't have anything official or anything like that. He's getting close to being able to throw some, not necessarily pitch, you know, not necessarily a bullpen session, but be able to throw a little bit. To me, it, almost if they get anything from A.J. Russell this year, I think it's gravy. I don't think there's hardly any chance that he gets worked back up into a starter-type role. But even if he can just be a guy that comes in and throws 25 pitches as kind of a high-leverage bullpen arm, I think that could go a long way, because I do think that's something, you know, a high velo, elite stuff, late-inning guy Tennessee doesn't necessarily have right now, because they're using a guy like Nate Snead as kind of a long relief. So I think that would go a long way just into filling a role and also giving Tennessee some versatility and some flexibility, I guess, more than versatility, in the way Tony Vitello and Frank Anderson handle this pitching stuff.
Ryan, can you talk about that opener role a little bit and the success that Tennessee has started to have with that? It felt like this weekend was almost a flawless execution of that plan, kind of with, you know, you get Stamos and then you lead him into Causey, and then, you know, in game three you've got Seacrest leading into an unbelievable outing from Nate Snead. So it really feels like they've started to feel good about that opener role and then, you know, leading into a big reliever. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
They have, and it's funny. I was talking about this with somebody yesterday that it almost feels like maybe their two best starting pitchers are guys that don't start, and Nate Snead and A.J. Causey, and how good those guys have been. And for a long time, we've heard Tony Vitello talk about kind of against the conventional wisdom of pitching roles in baseball, and it's always been revolved around the closer spot, and how in college baseball and, you know, a 60-game season, it doesn't make sense to have some, you know, your best bullpen arm be locked in as a closer, because the most important moment in a game can come here or there. But in those conversations, he talks about a lot about you're not necessarily looking, you're just looking for guys to get out. And I think you're seeing the fulfillment of that on the other end of the season, where some of Tennessee's best arms, they might not be starting the game, but they're the guy that Tennessee expects to eat the most out in that game. And that's how they're using them. And I think it kind of is twofold. With Stamos on Friday, obviously Causey had some struggles. Lefties really had the ability to get to Causey. And by starting Stamos, Tennessee feels like that, you know, takes away a little bit of an opponent's ability to just stack lefties in the lineup, and gives a little bit more of a balanced lineup that Causey's going to see entering a weekend. And then on the other side with Xander, he's a guy that's just really never been a bullpen guy. Since his whole career, he's been a midweek starter. They feel like that's the role he's most comfortable in. So they feel like he's very capable of going out there and getting them 6-9 to even a handful of times. He's gotten them, 15 outs in a game this season. But they like him in a starter spot, and then they can go to Snead. And Snead's a guy that they like to kind of use a little bit like they used Sean Hundley a couple years ago in 21, where they can piece it together. They can use him on a Friday night and turn around and maybe use him on Sunday too. So it gives them a lot of flexibility how they use Snead, who's perhaps their most talented pitcher on this staff with A.J. Russell's sideline. So it kind of is interesting how it works out in different ways, and you're right. I mean, it was nearly flawless this weekend. I really liked how they went with kind of a quick hook on Xander, even though he'd had a good second inning, a 1-2-3 second inning in Game 3 on Saturday night. It was still a rocky first inning. They talked about going into the week how Snead was really built up. They hadn't thrown him a ton the last two weekends. They knew he could give him a lot of innings, and obviously in a run roll, he got him to the finish line.
Appreciate Tennessee Williams for sharing this with us on X, but it's a breakdown of ERA and runs scored and kind of combining that. There are two teams in the country that are top 10 in both, Tennessee and A&M. Tennessee, 8th in ERA, 3rd in runs scored for an average of 5.5. A&M, 7th in ERA, 6th in runs scored for an average of 6.5. No one else, you know, even close in terms of having both top 10. Arkansas, for comparison's sake, number 1 in ERA, number 100 in runs scored. So it does feel to me, Ryan, like Tennessee and A&M maybe have the claim to kind of being ahead of the rest of the pack, especially when you can combine that with being in the SEC against the SEC schedule.
Yeah, and I think you talk about the ceiling of those two teams is a lot higher. I mean, I think Arkansas's pitching, not just being number one in the country, I think is probably by a decent margin number one in the country. So it feels like their floor is really high, but they do have a little bit of the feel of Tennessee last year where the pitching's so good, you feel confident that could probably get them to Omaha, but it's just kind of an uncertainty whether the offense is going to be good enough to make a deep run in Omaha and to make it and potentially win a national championship, where it feels like we get weak, you know, we go on every week and Tennessee's pitching continues to figure more and more stuff out, and you combine that with what's such an explosive offense that, to me, the conversation is fully changed, and it changed before this weekend too, as to whether this team can make it to Omaha, to how far, how many games can this team win in Omaha. Is this a team that could potentially win a national championship?
Let's switch gears. Let's talk some other Tennessee sports. Ben Hammonds, not set to come visit Tennessee anymore. That was the point guard that Tennessee was getting in the mix on at the end of this recruiting cycle. Any news there? Just Tennessee setting their sights somewhere else, or do we know?
I'm not really sure what the situation is with him and how that all broke down. I think it's, and we've talked about it, but it's similar to what Tennessee deals with you know, trying to find a backup quarterback, where you're looking for a very specific fit here when you're trying to find the guy, because you just know that Zakai Ziegler is going to, when games start to matter late in the season, he's going to play over 35 minutes, and there's not going to be a huge role for anyone else. But to me, it continues to become really fascinating. We know Chaz Lanier is a guy Tennessee's going to target heavily, a guy that they really want, but there's not a ton of other names floating around out there, and it does feel like those two other spots, if Tennessee would land Lanier, would be more kind of bench filler, developmental pieces. Who do they find? Because it feels like we've seen a few names bounce around, but there's never been a ton of traction with any of that. So I think that's going to be kind of curious to see, and I think it almost has gotten to the point where, to me, I'm not totally sure Tennessee's even going to fill out the full 13 scholarships by the end of the summer. It might be something where they go into the season with one scholarship available.
Well, personally, like, I saw the comparisons. You couldn't help but compare Ben Hammond to Zakai Ziegler. But personally, I don't want to get in the habit of always having an undersized point guard. Like, Zakai is kind of an outlier. I don't want to get in the habit of that. So maybe Rick Barnes kind of felt the same way. Anything else in football? Anything making news right now?
Not a ton in the football world. I mean, they're making their way through the big orange caravan right now, and it's been a lot of coach speak, as you would expect, some joking around, but no, not a ton going on. I guess you continue to, while transfer portal is closed, you continue to monitor to see maybe Tennessee could potentially, you know, look to add somebody. It feels like the defensive back room, cornerback specifically, would be the most likely spot that they would look to add somebody, but it feels like stuff's been pretty quiet there, and certainly a very, very quiet spring portal period for Tennessee as they get set to start summer workouts.
Talking about coach speak, I'm going to jump back to basketball for a second. And Coach Barnes, you put a piece on RTI, RockyTopInsider.com, about, and we've talked about it on the show, but I wanted to get your take about what Rick Barnes said about Felix Akpara. And the whole notion, as he put it, he brings us a physicality that we love to have and haven't consistently had there. You have covered Coach for a long time. You get more of his sound bites than any of us do. We're over here hoping that that was a bit of a troll by Rick. What do you think that was? I mean, was he just stating the facts of what he likes about Akpara, but do you think he's got it in him to get a little dig in as well on the outgoing guy?
You know, I don't know if I necessarily call it a dig, because Rick's a guy that's going to say what he wants, but he's also smart enough to, you know, not take shots a lot of times. And I'm not necessarily sure he'd call this a shot, but I think it's one of those things where he's not saying it to take a shot, to take a dig at Jonas or Tobe, but he doesn't care. That's how he feels, and he doesn't care to upset anybody by saying it, because there's no downside for him at this point of saying it. So that's kind of how I see it, if that makes sense. So
yeah,
it was certainly an interesting comment, for sure.
Yeah, just stating the fact, right? And then people can do what we did. They can run with it how they want, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, sometimes Rick will feel a way, and he's not going to say it because he feels like it has downsides. So it isn't, you know, just as simple as a guy that always says how he's feeling, because he's smart enough to know that sometimes saying how he's feeling is not the smartest thing to do in the media. But this one, I don't think he, at this point, I don't think he cares if he ruffles a few feathers in those camps by saying something like that.
All right, on the way out, Ryan, we've been asking the question, how many wins in these final six SEC games for the baseball team? They go at Vanderbilt this weekend and then finish it up next weekend at home against South Carolina.
Oh, man. I'll say five. I say they get a sweep in there, and then they win two out of three in the other. That's against my conventional wisdom of always saying just take care of business and win series against solid teams. But just if it's two teams that Tennessee's had a lot of success against under Tony Vitello, goodness knows Vanderbilt's playing really poorly right now. I just feel like Tennessee will get a sweep in one and get a series win in the other.
If negative Ryan Shumpert is saying five wins, hell, Tennessee might win seven of the next six. Anything you're working on, Rocky Top Insider?
Nothing specifically, you know, the long form side, but I'm hoping to write on Wednesday after we talk to Tony on Tuesday night following the game, just kind of the designated hitter conundrum Tennessee is in right now. That's kind of the one negative side of what's going on. They just can't find any sort of consistent production from that group and a number of guys that they've rotated through. And, you know, they've rotated players there throughout the season, especially as of late. And it just no hits from that group this weekend. And I think maybe only one or two guys reached base at all. So it's a big question mark to me, probably the biggest question mark with the team right now. And I'm hoping to get some quotes from Tony, and hopefully he'll give us some good stuff on it on Tuesday. And then I'm going to kind of dig into the numbers of where things have flipped and how the certain guys have struggled and how that's kind of a key for Tennessee's lineup, finding an extra gear and getting back to being the absolute best like it was earlier in the season.
Did he have any comments after the game on Saturday about benching Backus after one at bat?
He did. He talked about matchups a little bit,
okay,
and how with tags, you know, change up the way he had that working, he felt like it didn't make a ton of sense. And, you know, obviously the changeup part was the development that happened in the game. But, you know, my thing was Caglione wasn't a good matchup for Colby Backus to begin with. You know, it's the high-end fastball that you worry about with Backus because he kind of has a long swing. So if you're going to start him in what, to me, already wasn't a great matchup, it didn't make sense to pull him after one at bat. But I haven't, you know, coached a baseball program that traditionally wasn't very good, to the number one team in the country for the second time in 3 years. So, and I don't make $1.5 million a year to do it. So he gets paid the big bucks, and I'm sure he had good reasoning for it.
Yeah, I thought it was the lack of hustle in the field. I thought his play in right field, not backing up the Amick miss throw, was really why he got benched. I was curious if he had any quotes on that, but not good of him.
No, he didn't mention that, yeah. But that's an interesting theory too.
Yeah, good of him not to bury the kid. Do you have a name that you would pick right now at DH, or is it just going to be matchup dependent? Because I kind of would like to just have one person versus a platoon, but it seems like Tennessee's not going to be able to figure that out between now and the postseason.
I just roll with Dalton Bargo. Maybe if you want to throw somebody else in there with lefties, sure, but I just feel like Bargo is the most talented guy of that group. He is the best hitter of the group. He's the guy that I have the most confidence in is going to figure it out and get back to hitting at a high level. So if it was me, I would just be trying to force feed him as many at bats as possible to hope that he figures it out and gets back into the groove like he did early in the season, because he's the guy that I trust the most out of that group.
Ryan Shumpert, appreciate your time every Monday. Hope you enjoy your week, my friend.
Appreciate it, guys. Talk to you again next week.
Thank you, Ryan.
Winners and losers of the weekend brought to you by SM Athletics. You can look like a winner, even if your team loses, by getting your gear at SM Athletics. All of your sports, all of your equipment, embroidery needs can be handled by giving SM Athletics a call. Excellent customer service, great products at a fair price, and when they say it is done, it's done right and on time every time. Don't chance it with unreliable mega stores or online orders. You want to be able to walk in a store and talk to the people who are helping take care of your order and fulfill it. Stop by or give SM Athletics a call today at 865-966-3434. That's 865-966-3434, or visit online at smathletics.com. smathletics.com. Winners and losers of the weekend. Sam, please hit the music.
Winners and losers of the weekend.
No, you know, it's really not funny anymore, man. You just pick some music. I mean, dude, it's okay.
Succession theme? Y'all want that? Should that be the new one?
I don't think we're supposed to take those guys from that show as winners, really.
Yeah.
I'll play the intro again.
Bob, who won this weekend?
Okay, my winners. Number three, we've talked a lot about this, but Anthony Edwards, my God. It's like each passing playoff game's a kind of a coming out party for him, and Saturday night he was unbelievable. I don't know what else there is to say. He's, like we said, kind of the new heir apparent, the new face of the league, and he's only 22. It's incredible.
The Minnesota Timberwolves are must-watch TV right now.
Sure are.
Yeah.
I would agree.
And Anthony Edwards talked after the game about, I mean, he's a walking quote, too, in terms of just talking and giving what you want as an athlete. But said, hey, playing for Team USA got me ready for this, and it gets me excited for the Olympics and just that dynamic. Is he going to be the alpha of that team, too, on a team with LeBron James and Steph Curry and some other guys? Is that going to be Ant's team? Is he just going to take over the league this summer? I'm interested to see.
Yeah, I agree. Number two. New York Knicks and New York Rangers. This takes me back a little bit, to be honest with you, but those two together and their success so far in the playoffs, it's still kind of early, but they're trending in a good direction. Reminds us of 1994 in terms of when the Knicks and the Rangers, I think the Knicks were in the NBA Finals, the Rangers won the Stanley Cup. I was fortunate enough to be up there in New York when all that was happening. So it takes me back. But if you're a New York fan, I think it's good for professional sports, too. Although Sam wants the Knicks to lose as soon as possible. I think that it's a good flashback for sure. And then number one for winners for me was Madonna. Madonna comes out of nowhere, has a free concert in Rio de Janeiro. 1.6 million people in attendance. Biggest standalone concert for any artist, male or female, in history. 1.6 million. That sounds absolutely miserable to me, but it's pretty impressive.
1.6 million?
1.6 million. The shots they were showing, it was just like, it was amazing. I couldn't believe. I don't even know, you know, if you're where, you know, if you're way in the back of that, what are you seeing or hearing, honestly?
Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. Are they that star for, like, American culture that they, like, still show up for Madonna?
Yeah.
That,
it's good for her.
It's great for her. It's a nice flex for her. But, I mean, I can't imagine they're selling any tickets for that.
No. No, that's what I'm saying. It was free.
So, I mean, like, I don't know if she made a lot of money for doing it, but gets to add her name to the record books.
Yeah, maybe a legacy play for her more than anything.
My winners of the weekend, number three, I went with Netflix Live. Just thought it was another solid weekend for that as they try to ramp up and become a TV network, essentially, and trying to work out the kinks. They got Monday Night Raw coming soon, as they're going to try to do it every week in terms of putting on professional wrestling. But I thought the roast went well. I didn't have any buffering issues. I know you said at the very beginning you had a little bit.
Just a little slow, that was all. Just,
yeah, maybe I was late to the party and they'd got it figured out by then. But for me, it was good. It was nice, and I didn't see anybody really, you know, complaining about that, which is nice progress since the Love is Blind reunion that they had, because it was terrible in that go-around. Number two, I went with hip-hop, just more diss tracks. Like five of them dropped on from Friday to Sunday, five or six of them, hell, just one after another. I made a loser of the weekend maybe like a month ago or 3 weeks ago when J. Cole did his whole, "I'm going to apologize, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do this," which maybe he should be a winner too, because, you know, he saw what was coming. He's like, "I don't want to be involved in this. I don't want to be involved in all the skeletons coming out of the closet." But I thought it was a nice weekend of rap. So hip-hop, my number two winner. Number one, I went with NBA stars who sound like insects. Anthony Edwards, Spider, Donovan Mitchell. I know spiders aren't insects. I know because I Googled it to make sure, because I was like, I don't think they are, but let me Google it. And they said, no, they aren't. But they still sound like insects. When I hear insect and you hear spider, like, you're like, oh, yeah, those are related. They are distant ancestors or distant relatives. So, like, you know, maybe they have some insect blood in them. I don't know. But NBA stars who sound like insects. Anthony Edwards taking over the league. Donovan Mitchell going to go down in history as not a winner, as not like an all-time great player, but as one of the all-time great playoff performers. Like, he averages 29, 30 points a game in the playoffs. He's a great playoff performer, and he kind of added to that legacy this weekend and at least got them a playoff series win.
I was struck, too, by how he Darius Garland was having a rough day, and how he was there. He was being a real leader, Mitchell was. You know, he was there really trying to prop him up, and again, for whatever reason, I've always been not a big Donovan Mitchell fan, but I came away liking him more after yesterday's game. But they're going to get killed by Boston.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think so, too. Although they got size, so maybe if Jared Allen can come back and Porzingis stays out, maybe Cleveland goes super big. And who knows, Max Strus, maybe he is a Celtics killer from his days with the Heat. Maybe they just shoot really good from three. I don't think so. I think they're going to get killed, but maybe they can steal a couple games just off of size. Sam, anybody we missed?
I had two guys. I had Chris Kim. He was a 16-year-old playing this week on the PGA Tour. He made the cut, rounds of 68 and 67. Youngest golfer since 2013 to make a cut on tour. Finished up decent, I guess, on the weekend. One under and then a couple over on Sunday. But 16 years old, finishes 6 under for a tournament in the PGA Tour. Very, very impressive from him.
Did he make any money? Not, right?
No, he can't make any money. He's an amateur.
I did see that he said the thing he was most excited about was getting back home and getting his driver's license, though.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
That guy, I'm glad. I'm happy to hear he finished, what, minus six?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about where the guy I picked in my one-and-done pool did, Jason Day.
There you go. Jesus.
Sorry.
What did the winner finish at?
Like 20-something.
Okay, so 6-under is not that impressive then.
23-under.
I mean, I'm not taken away from the 16-year-old, but I'm just saying, like, it wasn't like he was anywhere near contention.
No,
he got beat by 17 strokes.
Yeah. But
no, good for him. Didn't make any money.
Right.
Maybe some down the road, maybe, although I remember one major, there was like some 15-year-old fat amateur that was out there that like was somewhat on the leaderboard.
You just can't make anything.
But then, like, I don't think he like ever turned in anything, but like he had his moment in the sun, but like he was like 15, 16 years old. But
and then that kid, not this year, but last year, the kid from A&M, Sam Bennett, you know, mm-hmm. he was like top 10, and they were like, man, he's going to find his way back into the Masters next year. Oh, can't make any money. Like,
sucks. Yeah, has he been anything? Is he still a factor?
I think he's still playing college golf, to be honest with
okay.
you.
Okay.
I don't think he's turned pro officially. Okay. I'm not sure, though.
I can always count on you to tell me some obscure golf story on winners and losers of the weekend. What was the other one you said you had, too?
I had the UFL kicker, Jake Bates. I think I've mentioned this kid before, but he will be on an NFL roster very soon. Hit another 60-yard field goal. So far in the UFL, he's got field goals from 64, 62, 60, 55, and 52. Kid's got a leg.
He had a 60-yarder this weekend that looked like it was good from 70.
Yeah, and it's just like right down the middle, too. Yeah.
He's a stud.
He's a beast. Those are my two winners.
He's going to get to the NFL and lose it, and he's going to be
back to the UFL. Yeah, in like four more weeks.
Some fan base is going to really hate this guy next year because they're going to hear about how awesome he is, and then he's going to get in front of big stadiums with loud fans, and he's going to just start shanking, shanking kicks.
Yeah.
I was going to say shanking shots, but they do not shoot the ball; they kick the ball. Mm-hmm. All right, loser of the weekend, Bob. What do you got?
Number three. This will be his first appearance probably in losers ever, is Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I don't know if you saw what's starting to break out this past weekend on him, but it's some heavily negative stuff.
Oh, I haven't seen anything with this.
It's been mostly about how difficult he is to work with. And it started with, it's a movie that they're producing for Amazon that got pushed back to November. It was supposed to release this summer, called Red One. And, part of it is they're so far behind schedule on it, and it's all attributable to him, because he typically, not just every once in a while, typically shows up late to set by hours all the time, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours, because he wants to get his workout in, because he's got other stuff to do. And then what came out after that was there was also a movie that he did with Ryan Reynolds for Netflix. I think, what was it called? Was it Red Note? It was him and Gal Gadot.
Oh, yeah.
And now there's talk that Reynolds and him had an incredible feud during filming of that, and it was all attributable to The Rock never showing up on time, ever. And I mean, again, not just a little bit late. Like, you know, they created massive production delays. They had to shoot around scenes where he was supposed to be in them and everything else. And then there's all sorts of other little nitpicky things about how he behaves on set. It's floating around everywhere on the internet right now. And it's like, you know, when you're somebody who's got it going like he always does, you got to be careful, because people will try to pick away. And boy, they're starting to pile on this stuff.
Yeah, they were supposed to be making a sequel to that Red Note movie or whatever. But I don't know if it was such a bad experience, if Ryan Reynolds would sign up for that. Yeah. You know, with the Deadpool stuff going on, he doesn't necessarily need to do a Netflix movie to make that money if he truly hated working with The Rock.
Yeah.
You know, there was some rumblings that started. I mean, him and Vin Diesel hated each other on Fast and Furious, but I think most people probably gave The Rock the benefit of the doubt in that one, because Vin Diesel's such a weird person that was also trying to, like, protect the Fast and Furious legacy, and it was kind of weird when it came to that. But then the Black Adam stuff kind of took it to another level, where he wouldn't do any crossover movies with Henry Cavill and the Superman stuff. He wanted Black Adam to be the main focus, and I guess maybe The Rock's a little bit of a diva.
Guess so. Yeah. It's inevitable, man. When you get that big, it seems to always happen.
It's not good timing with him being, like, playing a heel persona in wrestling either, though, because, like, you don't want to start, like, actually coming across like a jerk on screen, because then the jerk stories behind the scenes actually hit more, and you're like, this might actually just be him being himself.
Well, and I thought of you when, remember, we talked a couple of weeks ago where he was late to the event in Philadelphia. You know?
Yeah, he was 2 hours late. That's right.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Looks like a pattern. Number two, did anybody check out the movie Unfrosted?
No.
The Jerry Seinfeld movie that just got released on Netflix.
I saw it, but I didn't hear anything about it until this week, and I didn't watch it.
Yeah, don't hurry. It's not good. It's about the creation of the Pop-Tart. And it's like the feud between Post and Kellogg's, and has a great cast. I mean, it's got Seinfeld, Melissa McCarthy, Jim Gaffigan, Hugh Grant, Amy Schumer. It's not good. And, you know, Seinfeld made an appearance on Saturday Night Live this weekend to kind of prop it up. I just never thought Seinfeld would do something worse than, well, I was going to say his series finale for Seinfeld, but also B-Movie, which I don't know if you remember seeing that. It was an animated movie that he came out with, which was not good. This is not great. It's getting panned in a lot of places. There's been a few fans, but it's getting...
Wait a minute, Bob. Are you saying B-Movie is bad?
I thought B-Movie was bad.
Oh, come on. That's a classic.
Oh God!
Sounds like you might have been too old for it, Bobby. I don't think it was geared towards you.
Well, it was. So let's think about that. That was 2007. Sam, you must have been about six.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like the woman, like the bee and the woman kind of fall in love together, right? Like
it's a good story, man.
Right, but like that's kind of like, doesn't she fall in love with the bee? It seems that way. I don't remember really watching it. I was too old to watch B-Movie at that point.
I had to. I was with my kids.
Sure.
So, yeah. But
I was just one DVD I had that was always on like road trips, throwing B movie at some point.
Yeah, I'm not the target. I'm not the target demographic for that. So
50% from the critics, 53% from the audience. So I'm going to give Bob the nod here.
I mean, has any animated movie ever just killed Rotten Tomatoes?
Almost every animated movie kills Rotten Tomatoes. Like, I would say animated movies, especially the good ones, like with high dollars behind them from like Pixar and DreamWorks and all that, I would say all of them are like in the 80s at least.
You think?
Yeah. Because it's easy to have great animated movies because you don't have to worry about acting. It's just, you just got to have the story. Like every Toy Story is going to be like in the 90s.
Don't mess around with my animated film knowledge, Sam.
Toy Story, I feel like, is a lot more impressive than.
Well, yeah, I mean, sure.
I'm trying to think of a B movie comparison.
I don't know, like Up's going to be like in the 90s. I mean,
that's
like
bigger than B movie.
Now Up made me tear up.
Up's good.
Well, I mean, the B movie might not be that big, Sam, because it might not have been that good. Like, so like you saying, well, these other movies are bigger. Well, yeah, because they're good.
I got like multiple ones though.
I mean, the B movie really 2007. Yeah, because I would have guessed like 2003 or so, but.
I would have guessed later. I would have guessed like 9 or 10, I feel.
Okay.
All right. Don't see Unfrosted. You don't.
Jerry Seinfeld doesn't really scream movie star, so no. I wasn't planning on watching it.
No.
And yeah, not to pile on, but you said great cast and then hit me with Amy Schumer and Hugh Grant in 2024, which I don't really have any interest in seeing either one of them. Hugh Grant was a huge movie star, but like I haven't seen him in anything good in 20 years, really. Amy Schumer, I think we've kind of turned on her officially, and Melissa McCarthy. I mean, I like her.
Yeah, I love Melissa McCarthy. Yeah. Gaffigan I like, too.
Not as a movie star, though, really.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. All right, number one. It's kind of linked. I was going to say Pat Beverly, but really it's about ESPN. And the reason I say that is we know at this point everything Pat Beverly did at the end of that Pacers-Bucks series, and it's reprehensible, all that. And ESPN went out and said, no, we're banning him from the network for future appearances. Okay, that was Friday. On Saturday, they walked back their stance and said that Beverly is not banned and that no action was taken against him. And so this contradicts a policy that credentialed press had gone out with from ESPN. So they changed their message in a 24-hour span.
So ESPN basically claimed they never did anything, though. So they're saying the report was erroneous. So, like, do you buy that, or do you think ESPN buckled and reversed course? Because when I saw the headline, I assumed somebody had gotten the story wrong and ESPN never did anything at all.
I don't know. What I'm reading is they're saying that these media outlets had direct knowledge that this was their position, and direct meaning they heard it from ESPN.
Well, I think they should just sever ties with him if he's going to be mean to ESPN reporters, that girl. I mean, I don't think you need Pat Beverly on The Jump or whatever the NBA Live show is.
No, and I mean, he's going to be a free agent anyway. It'll be really interesting. I bet you he doesn't even get picked up by a team. I think he's probably, this might be the end for him, honestly. He's a little bit older.
Did either of you happen to see Nick Wright, his like 3-minute takedown of Patrick Beverly?
Yeah.
I saw the tease for it on X, and then I never opened it up.
It was worth the watch.
It was. I'm really not a Nick Wright guy at all, and it was a pretty good video.
Yeah.
I like Nick Wright, and I hate Patrick Beverly. Like, I don't like love Nick Wright or anything, but I like him. I find him to be funny. But I've hated Patrick Beverly for like 4 or 5 years, ever since he hurt Westbrook on that cheap play where he like went at his knee when they're getting ready to call timeout, and it tore his meniscus. Like, I've thought Patrick Beverly's just a cheap shot guy since then. Like, I hate him, but I love the takedown he had of him.
He called out, didn't Beverly call out Chris Paul that one time?
Yeah, so he was a traffic cone. Like, after pushed him in the back after Chris Paul had sent him home. Like, Patrick Beverly's got a long list of bad things he's done, so I was glad to see Nick Wright. It seemed a little personal. It seemed weird for somebody to, like, punch down almost that Patrick Beverly, like, from a media, you know, journalist standpoint. I would have liked to have like had the video play a little bit longer because I would have wanted to hear what like Chris Broussard would say, which I never thought I would say. I was interested in what Chris Broussard would say, but I wanted to see how he responded to Nick Wright. Yeah, just going on a 3-minute ISO of how much he hated Nick, of how much he hated Patrick Beverly and how he was a fraud and sucked at basketball and was a grifter, basically. Mm. All right, my losers of the weekend. Number three, I went with Kim Kardashian. Mostly because, she got booed at the roast, which I felt bad for. She got booed. She was looking very pretty, though. She was looking great. That's the prettiest.
That was one that didn't need to be in there either.
Well, I think maybe Tom Brady's trying to have sex with her. Maybe. Like, it seems like there was those rumors of them dating, so maybe Tom brought her. And, like, it did seem like they had a little energy there. And then also, Kim's going to have to deal with Kanye because Tom Brady made a joke about Kanye. And
oh, I didn't hear that.
Kim's like, the look Kim had on her face is like, really? Like, you're just going to open this can of worms back up? Kanye had been kind of chilling, right? Like, he's been laying low. But, like, Tom Brady's like, Kim got booed, and Kim didn't really want to be here. Not because she was scared, but because she didn't want to leave her kids at home with the dad. And Kim was like, looking like, oh, man. Like,
I'm going to have to listen to that. Yeah. That's good.
That was, like, really the only funny joke I thought Brady had, to be honest. Like, I thought Brady's part was pretty cringy. Pretty like, but, like, I did think that line was good. But she's a loser. Number two, Franz Wagner. 1 of 15, a closeout game. That's something that maybe kills your career. Like, I don't know if you bounce back from that. At least, like, if I'm Minnesota, like, I'm now wondering, can he be a second or third best player on this team if we're trying to get to where we're going? Maybe he's in the trade package that tries to get them a point guard. And number one, I went with a combo, the horse and NASCAR guy who came close to winning but didn't win. Like, you were so close. You were so close to being winners. And if you're the horse owner, like,
God.
No one's going to pay a big stud fee for the second place in the Kentucky Derby. If he was like, you know, a tenth of a second faster, you'd be a, you know, even more of a millionaire. That horse would be have it made. And since you lost, who knows? Maybe that was your only chance. Maybe you're never in the Derby again.
I had that as well. Opposite side of the photo finish.
Yeah. Anybody else you want to add in?
I had people who continue to pitch to Charlie Condon. Hit his 33rd home run of the season yesterday. Tied the all-time season record in the BB Corps era. He's hit homers in 7 straight games. He's absurd. He's really just bringing that Georgia team along, honestly. They're kind of sneaking their way into potentially maybe hosting a regional.
I was going to say they're definitely a tournament team, right, at this point. Like, they're definitely a tournament team and could be a top 16 seed. What a beast. What's the record for the season, home run record? Do we know? Look that up during the break and give that to me, because I feel like he has to be closing in on it. Like, he's
pacing on it. I've seen.
He hit 7 straight, right? He hit 7 home runs, or he hit home runs in 7 straight games. What a tear.
I think they need him to, like, stay on this pace and get a couple wins in the postseason for him to break the record, I want to say. I'll look it up.
Okay. Good batch of winners and losers. Send us a break.